Radio Nederland Wilderrillebrup. Broadcasting from Hilversum. We're politically independent, but frequently misspelled.
Via medium wave, short wave, and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service.
Media Networks Berlin Briefing. Jonathan Marks and Diana Janssen are in search of original idea.
Das Leid ist vorbei. Du bist wieder frei. Die ganze Welt kommt gern zu dir. Berlin, Berlin. Ich kann nicht anderswo so glücklich sein und froh wie hier bei dir, Berlin, Berlin.
Yes, that music sounds familiar, but in the great tradition of German films, the words are different. Welcome to Berlin, which once every 2 years hosts the world's largest consumer electronics fair called the Internationale Funkausstellung. A week ago, half of the stands weren't finished.
When we arrived last Friday, whole armies of carpenters and electricians were building stands, arranging lighting, and starting to unpack all sorts of equipment. Gangways were blocked by giant containers, paper and bits of wood were strewn everywhere. And yet, by 10 a.m. on Saturday, everything was ready.
The organizers wanted to prepare the journalists too. I got back to the hotel to find a Berlin survival kit waiting in my room. It was a plastic pack containing a map, a bar of chocolate, a large dose vitamin C tablet, some foot cream and a plaster. And we needed it.
50,000 people streamed through the gates on the first day, August 26th. What with the cloudy and cool weather we've been having, every day has been packed to the same level since then. By the time the fair closes on Sunday, 500,000 people will have been to the exhibition. It's difficult to describe how big it is. 100,000 square meters is hard to visualize. It's taken us 3 days to visit each of the halls and absorb just some of the detail on show here. 700 exhibitors have arrived from over 20 countries.
Until the fall of the Berlin Wall, the Funkausstellung had a political function too, allowing the West to show off to Eastern Europe. Now it's grown so big that getting an overview of the trends is very difficult. Perhaps it's not surprising when you know that worldwide over $140 billion worth of consumer electronic equipment will be sold this year, of which Europe accounts for around $40 billion. Companies have no hesitation in spending millions of dollars to build a stand here for just 8 days.
You find some companies selling components like switches or cleaning fluids who only really want to talk to dealers. The seething mass of public is just a nuisance, and as the temperature rises, so tempers fly. There's frustration from some dealers that new models are launched here up to 2 years before they'll ever be in the shops, creating a demand that can't be fulfilled and killing the sales of current models that the public discover will soon be obsolete.
A lot of local people come to sit in the gardens in the heart of the exhibition centre to watch game show hosts and singers from commercial and public TV make some live television for a change. Others mill around the stands, pushing buttons, soaking up the atmosphere, collecting stickers and drinking beer.
An der Küste gibt es Schiffe, an der Küste gibt es Fisch, aber leider kein Gebirge und dies ist bedauerlich. Doch dafür gibt's Wellenberge, die sind Meter hoch bei Sturm. Aber höher, noch viel höher, ist der Berliner Fernsehturm.
About 70% of the stands in Berlin fail to communicate a message because it's not clear who the companies are talking to. Philips has a giant stand which says, "Let's make things better," their new worldwide slogan, which also forms the basis for the biggest ad campaign ever booked by this Dutch concern. 5,000 television spots have already been reserved across the globe. After the huge financial losses of recent years in their consumer electronics sector, you might agree that things couldn't get much worse, until you look again at the logo and realise that Philips means let's make the Earth a better place through improved communication, which of course means buying more of their stuff.
Most of the main halls scream at you for attention. The focus is on entertainment. You want higher quality, more realistic graphics on your new video game system, says Sony and Sega. There are countless Dolby surround systems to transform your living room into a home cinema, ignoring protests from the neighbors. And everyone wants you to throw out your existing television because it's the wrong shape.
By 1997, around 25% of the television programmes on European channels will use the 16:9 format, the shape of the screen in the cinema, and the format that most closely matches the human field of vision. If you watch these programmes on a conventional television, you get annoying black bars across the top of the picture. Mind you, that means in 1997, that 75% of the programmes on a 16:9 set will have annoying bars at the side of the picture, unless you electronically chop the picture to fit the screen. And that's okay on some shows, but very annoying with drama and sports productions.
Every year, 20 million TV sets are sold in Europe. Last year, just 230,000 of them were 16:9 receivers. So the standard 4:3 receiver is still the biggest seller.
Consumers often realise too late that the new sets take up more space in the living room. A set with a 70cm tube in the 16:9 format is only really the same as a 55cm tube in the 4:3 design.
Technology is developing so fast that computing power doubles every 8 months. Analog systems, which were designed to improve the picture quality compared to a standard PAL or NTSC picture, have been steamrolled into oblivion by the drive to digital technology. So-called Mac and D2 Mac systems were given multi-million dollar development subsidies by the European Commission in the 80s in an attempt to beat off older Japanese developments in the field of high-definition television. Yet Mac is not going to happen. Choice of channels is seen as more important than improved picture quality.
And now history will repeat itself with, we predict, misleading hype surrounding PAL Plus. In 1988, Grundig, the German company of which Philips owns 30% of the shares, embarked on a project with German public networks ARD and ZDF. The concept was simple: gradually improve the PAL transmission standard. Consumers would be first persuaded to change televisions for the 16:9 format, and a small box of electronics would ensure marginal improvement to the picture quality. You have to look really hard at the screen, though, to see the difference. But in Northern Europe, especially in Britain and Germany, PAL Plus is currently being promoted to the maximum by terrestrial broadcasters. But we think it's dead before it starts, because satellite channel providers like Astra will begin digital video broadcast experiments by the end of this year.
Publishers, broadcasters and equipment makers know that if data is stored digitally, it doesn't matter whether it's text, audio or video. Traditional radio and television sets have little intelligence built in. They pick signals off the air and replay them in real time. If the transmission system is digital, though, you can transfer 3 or 4 times as much information over existing cable and satellite channels, providing there is processing power in the receiver to unravel the digital puzzle at the other end.
And the big question is, will you, the consumer, be prepared to pay for it?
This is AM Radio, where active minds get involved and interact.
Across Europe, international radio broadcasters are trying to get into the ether. In Berlin, because of the legacy of the Allied powers, you'll find VOA, BBC and Radio France International on the FM dial. And World Radio Network has recently been added to the Berlin cable on 93.8 MHz. And in London, as we hear from Carl Mioska, manager of World Radio Network, international broadcasters have temporary access to the London airwaves.
Which, it turns out, is quite some achievement.
Yes, we're on FM for a month, Jonathan.
On what frequency?
The frequency is 107.8, and we started on Tuesday, and we've had reports from around London to say reception is good.
With what sort of power?
We limit it to 10 watts, which means that it should be okay in your car, but probably won't penetrate very well into buildings. I've certainly found that...
So you can be received in most of central London?
That's right.
And how long does this last?
It's until the 23rd of September.
But when this temporary licence finishes, then you are hoping that people will tune into the satellite service?
That's right. That's one of the aims. The other one is to also prove to the radio authority that we should be given a licence. And there are a couple more licences coming up next year, and we hope to apply again, and hopefully we'll be successful.
What about the World Wide Web? That's developing too.
Yes, it is. Since we last spoke, we now are offering, as an experimental service, audio clips from programming in the real audio format. And you can download the software from our site. And if you've got a 14400 modem connection with the internet at that speed, you'll be able to just click on the icons of the various stations that we offer audio, and within a few seconds of doing that, you can get programming.
We're in fact getting reception reports from people who are hearing Media Network that way, rather
than usual. Yeah, that's right. I think this is definitely a sign of what's going to happen in the future. I think when the audio quality improves so that it's you can broadcast music on the internet. At the moment, it's limited just to speech. I think then it'll really take off in a big way. And we've had 3,300 hits to our site. Those are visits, people who've looked at our pages.
And what about the URL that people have to remember?
Aha. Well, it's quite short, and we're glad about that. And here it is. It's http://www.wrn.org/.
Last but not least, you've got a new station that's joined the network.
We're very excited. It's Channel Africa from the SABC in Johannesburg. It's their external service. We get a feed from them now on weekdays on ISDN from Johannesburg, and it gets broadcast in Europe and North America at 10:30 UTC.
Calm me, Oscar. But only a small percentage of the world's population has the money or access to the technology for FM, let alone DAB or internet.
What about the traditional radio market? International radio enthusiasts have not been forgotten at the Funkausstellung. Sony has two large displays pushing their world receivers, one of them explaining the 37-year history of the transistor radio. They've got landmark receivers in the cabinet, like the ICF 5900 and the ICF 2001. But almost tucked away at the bottom is Sony's latest portable, the ICF SW1000T.
It's a compact portable shortwave receiver with a built-in stereo tape recorder. It's a well-guarded secret because no one on the Sony stand can tell us anything about it. We managed to examine one of the samples, though, for a few minutes. It's slightly smaller and thicker than the familiar ICF SW7600 series. There's synchronous detection for shortwave, 30 memories and straightforward keypad tuning, plus a dial light.
The price will be 999 German marks, and that's around $650. About half that is the cost of the receiver. The other half goes towards integrating the cassette recorder. The label says available late 1995. We guess that March 96 will be more like it.
Contrast that low-key launch with a giant stand in the Grundig Hall, pushing 50 years of the company and its entire range of portable radios. The design engineers from Grundig, Germany, are on the stand doing the demonstrations of existing products and showing one of three working samples of the new Satellite 900. Production of the 900 was to have started this year, but software development delays mean that May 96 is the new target. The radio is dominated by a giant liquid crystal display, which can also show text transmitted in the radio data system, that's on FM only. It's packed full of extensive memory features, rather like the existing Satellite 700. It's been restyled, though, using a Dutch design company who also did the Yachtboy 500. What's more, the radios on the stand actually work, because Grundig's been very clever to disguise an active loop into the giant stand at the Funkausstellung, so that the radios on display can couple with an antenna on the roof of the pavilion. Reception, therefore, is possible next to 1,000 television sets. Grundig also realises that specialised technology like this needs specialists to explain it.
Most manufacturers create an image of the future by linking it with space. Company logos tumble out of distant solar systems, Laser beams dance across the ceiling to the crescendo of synthetic drums. All this has very little to do with the way we listen to music or watch television. The consortium of Telefunken, Saba and Thomson is far more innovative. In their hall, around 40 televisions show a single picture, a field of green grass waving in the breeze. The fact that the stand is so quiet means you can concentrate on what technology really may have to offer.
Alongside the flat television screen of the future, a new line of portable shortwave receivers is also on display, but not yet in their winter catalogue. This marks a return by Telefunken into the German market for shortwave portables. Siemens told us that new sets as a result of their links with Sanjin of Taiwan are also on the way. Talking of delays, we've also been watching the launch of the low HF 250 receiver, but last-minute software problems have halted shipment of the first receivers for at least 3 to 4 weeks, according to dealers here in Germany. Receivers will be the talking point for a shortwave listener gathering here in Berlin on Thursday evening.
IFA 95, 100,6, live.
Datenhighway, Multimedia, DAB, interaktives Fernsehen. 100,6 Expresso will's heute Morgen wissen. Blicken Sie noch durch? Multimedia, klarer Fall oder Chaos im Kopf? 100,6 Expresso, Top-Thema heute.
The local commercial station 100.6 is one of 18 radio stations with a stand at the Funkausstellung. In fact, it's more than 18 because half of the Deutsche Welle stand in Hall 3 was paid for by the European Broadcasting Initiative Radio E. At present, the project consists of 4 stations, Radio Netherlands, BBC, Deutsche Welle and Radio France International, who had a press conference on Monday afternoon. Deutsche Welle's director general Dieter Weyrich said all the partners hoped to extend the initiative.
Radio E.
The Berlin DAB project is the launch for a Europe-wide international initiative.
If successful, it would mean that listeners with a DAB receiver will not only be able to hear local and national stations, but also programs from other countries. As with any new project, no one will heavily invest in new programs unless there are receivers in the marketplace. And the public won't buy the receivers until they are in the shops and there are programs to listen to. So far, DAB test receivers have been huge metal cases built into special vans. Now that the technology has been tested, manufacturers have started to miniaturize components so they can squeeze the DAB section into a case the size of an auto CD changer. The results of this process went on display for the first time last week at the DAB stand in Hall 14.
We come now to the DAB platform for Germany, and in a glass case on the Funkausstellung, 4 receivers actually. Bosch Blaupunkt have come up with a set which isn't actually ready. It's about the size of a small attaché case, but not actually connected. Underneath it is the digital car radio from Grundig, the DCR 1000 DAB. Actually looks very much like an ordinary car radio, but the only difference being a box that you have to put in the back of the car. And that box at the moment is about the size, half the size of a shoebox, so much smaller than we've seen in the last couple of years. Philips is also represented, the DCC828 DAB, again an ordinary car radio, and connected to it by a lot of cables, a small black box which again fits into the back of the car. Underneath that, a much larger box from Kenwood, who are also busy with developing DAB, but obviously so far have not managed to miniaturize the components, their LZ24 prototype car receiver for DAB. So 4 manufacturers represented here at the moment.
Achim von Michel is public relations manager for Bayerische Medientechnik, which is the company organizing the DAB pilot project in Munich.
We are going to start marketing activities in November of this year. We are trying to convince the public first that DAB is a very high quality radio standard which is near to the compact disc. And the other key issue of DAB is, of course, that we are trying to get new programs on DAB which cannot be received on traditional FM band.
But can the general public buy a DAB receiver yet?
No, the receivers are not sold in stores. Interested persons can call our company in Bavaria, and they match several criteria. For example, they have to live in our DAB test region and they have to possess their own car. Then they can get one of the receivers for a special price.
So for about $500, you get a very nice car radio and a box. What do you do with the box?
Oh, well, the box is rather small. It is easy to install in the trunk of the car, so there's no problem.
Has Grundig made many of these DAB sets, though?
Grundig has so far produced about the first 10 or 15 test receivers here for the IFA. For the Bavarian project, they're planning to produce about 4,000 DAB receivers.
But as well as broadcasting audio, you can also put out text, is that right?
That's right. One of the key issues of DAB is, apart from digital audio, is the transmission of all kinds of data, which might be text information, which might be pictures, which might be complete multimedia programs as you know them, for example, for the internet.
Because I noticed the standard that's been chosen, at least in Germany, looks very similar to a World Wide Web page.
That's right, especially the Bavarian project, which is the BMT, has a cooperation with the German Telecom, and we are trying to set up a standard for DAB, which is actually the HTML programming standard.
Finally, a simple question from the consumers that have come to the Berlin Fair. Can they really tell the difference between ordinary FM and DAB?
I think you can, especially when you hear classic music. There is a very, very huge difference. And when you use DAB in the car, you will find out that there are no more distortions, example, when you are in a tunnel or when you are in areas with skyscrapers. The DAB signal is on all positions, a clear, good radio signal.
Andreas Fischer is general manager of the DAB platform in Munich. We asked him whether DAB will also be of interest for pan-European broadcasters.
DAB could help in these problems because there are still plans to launch a satellite system to transmit DAB over whole Europe. And you can receive these programs with a small rad antenna, and with the same receiver you can get DAB programs via terrestrial transmitters.
There was a conference in Wiesbaden, Germany in July to assign the frequencies for DAB in Europe. It succeeded in allocating two bands. One, the so-called Channel 12, between 223 and 230 megahertz, and another on sections of the so-called L band, from 1452 to 1492 megahertz. Unlike short and medium wave, the listener will choose a station by name, not by frequency. The user won't really know whether he or she is listening to 220 or 1452 megahertz. Car radios of the future will need two antennas, though, one for AM and FM and a small antenna for DAB.
This will be possible because for the L-band reception you need only a very small antenna, and for channel 12 that's nearly the same, just like FM, so it won't be any problem at all.
We're developing a standard in Europe, the Eureka 147. Is there a danger, though, that when you go to the United States or to Asia or to Africa, you're going to have to take a different radio with you in the future because they won't adopt the same transmission standard?
For example, in Canada, in Australia, in China, there is very much interest for DAB, for the Eureka 147 system. So probably we have the chance to provide a worldwide system with DAB. We are on the way to it.
And a piece of news just in. The US Electronic Industries Association has been testing various DAB systems and has announced that the Eureka 147 is the best, followed by the in-band on-channel system developed by USA Digital Radio.
For shortwave listeners, one of the most interesting developments in Berlin has been the demonstration of digital modulation over medium and shortwave. Professor Dietmar Rudolf works at the Technical Fachhochschule for the German Telecom in Berlin. His group has developed a system whereby it's possible to get nearly FM quality over medium wave. First, they encode the audio using the new MPEG-3 standard, but that still is not enough.
We get a bit stream of about 20 bits per second. If you would transmit this, you should have 20 kilohertz bandwidth. That's too much. In Europe, you have a channel spacing of 9 kilohertz, and you only can use 9 kilohertz, not more. So we use different modulation. We'll use an amplitude phase shift keying, which combines 5 bits to a symbol. So we can transmit in the 9 kilohertz spacing about 33, 34 kilobit per second.
Now, the result, listening to it here on the stand, is that you get pretty good FM mono instead of, indeed, the problems you have normally with the medium wave. Is that correct?
Nearly correct. We are not as good as FM mono. We are only as good as television sound.
Well, here's a chance to judge for yourself.
Das Wetter. Von einigen wenigen Auflockerungen abgesehen, vorherrschend stark bewölkt und zeitweise Schauer oder schauerartiger Regen, vor allem an den Nordseiten der Mittelgebirge.
Lousy weather, but good audio quality. If you're listening on shortwave, of course, you won't hear any difference. But if you're listening to us on any satellite system, I'm sure you agree that that sounds a lot better than any shortwave or mediumwave signal. However, it's a revolutionary approach rather than evolutionary development. It would mean that listeners would have to buy new digital medium-wave and short-wave receivers. Dietmar Rudolph argues that because of declining audiences on medium-wave, there will come a time quite shortly when this is a viable solution. Initial simulated experiments over short-wave are hopeful too, because algorithms have been developed to compensate for fading. More info when we have it.
Thanks for your feedback by phone, fax, letter, and electronic mail, because you're helping to shape the future programs that are broadcast on Radio Netherlands. Remember that comments and questions always reach the producers concerned. So listen to us, because we listen to you.
Now it's unlikely that you recognize this.
This is the Irish shortwave station broadcasting on a wavelength of 16.82 meters or 17,840 kilocycles.
Those indeed were the days. According to our next caller on the answer line, shortwave from Ireland, though, still has a future.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Michael Commons here in Claremorris, County Mayo, Ireland. You may recall I was on to you a few weeks ago in relation to a seminar on shortwave radio here in the west of Ireland. Our guest speaker was Simon Spanswick from the BBC World Service Waveguide programme, and he delivered a fine address to the well-attended seminar.
Just under 100 people turned up and clearly enthused officials at RTE Radio in Dublin to try an experiment. Shortwave will be revived on this coming Sunday, September 3rd, when Irish Overseas Broadcasting Limited will transmit the All-Ireland Hurling Final between Clare and Offaly on shortwave frequencies to Europe and North Africa.
This historic two-hour broadcast is an experimental transmission made possible by the goodwill and cooperation of RTE and the BBC. Michael Cummings is back on the line with more details.
That's right, Jonathan. And to that end, Irish Overseas Broadcasting Limited has secured and hired two transmitters, two BBC transmitters, and they're two 250 kilowatts. And we'll be broadcasting the match. It's the full RTE radio commentary of the All-Ireland Hurling Final between Clare and Offaly, between 1400 and 1600 hours UTC on two frequencies, and they are 9605 kilohertz and 5875 kilohertz.
I'll just repeat those, 9605 and 5875 kilohertz, the time again from 14 to 16 hours UTC on Sunday, September the 3rd. But what is hurling?
Hurling is Ireland's native game. It goes back a long, long way. It's a game that's played especially in the south of Ireland and in the east of Ireland, with pockets in the north and the west. It's a game that attracts a huge and passionate following, and the All-Ireland final on Sunday between Clare and Offaly is already sold out. 70,000 cheering, fanatical supporters will be in Dublin for that game.
So what do they have to do? It's a bit like hockey, isn't it?
Yeah. It's played with what a stick called a camon, and it does resemble hockey to a degree. But obviously, the main difference between hurling and hockey is that you can take the ball in the hand in hurling, while hockey is more or less on the ground.
And when do you expect the broadcast to be heard?
Well, the main target areas, Jonathan, are Europe and North Africa, and also perhaps parts of the near Middle East around Israel and the Lebanon.
The times again from 14 to 16 hours UTC. And what about reception reports?
Yes, reception reports will all be answered, and they can be sent to the following box number. It's 4950, 4950 Dublin 1, and they can be addressed to Irish Overseas Broadcasting Limited.
So that's the Irish Overseas Broadcasting Limited, P.O. Box 4950 Dublin 1 in Ireland. Two other items in brief. Radio Antilles in Montserrat is off the air because of the serious weather conditions in the region. 930 kHz is an important relay for BBC, Deutsche Welle and Voice of America in the Caribbean. And we understand Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott will take over from Gene Rich as the new host of Communications World on the Voice of America. Our very best wishes to both. Finally to Mike Bird in Melbourne for the propagation update. First though, Mike, it's cloudy and cool in Berlin. What's it like in Melbourne?
The weather at the moment is coolish at about 15 degrees.
And what about the propagation survey over the last 7 days?
Well, solar activity was again low. The solar flux ranged between 74 and 82. The average works out to 77.8, which equals an effective sunspot number of 16, and that is up 11 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 20 and 6, which represents active to quiet conditions. The magnetic field was quiet last Thursday. On Friday, it became generally active. Since Saturday, the magnetic field has been generally quiet to unsettled.
Lots of reaction to the news last week that we may be entering solar sunspot cycle number 23. What about your predictions for the coming week, though?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expects solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should be generally quiet to unsettled, except between Sunday and Tuesday, when a coronal hole on the sun should produce active levels again.
Thanks, Mike. And on behalf of Diana and myself, have a pleasant weekend.
Okay? Budu-budu-budu-budu-budu-budu.
Quiet, please.
No, let's end the way we came in. Closing music, please.
Life here by dear Berlin.
Berlin Briefing was a Media Network special feature. Production by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.